So I'm going to talk a little bit before we go to lunch and maybe shift, turn the corner a bit from just the first noble truth of knowing suffering is there to shifting into the second truth. What to do with it once we notice it. But I want to start with a little story. I shared a little bit of this with Margot. It's embarrassing. I found that I think if a teacher tells a story that's embarrassing, that you also will begin to look at your embarrassing stories and say, "Oh, what can I learn from this?" So this is a little embarrassing, but I'm gonna tell it anyway. Years ago, when I was like 35, I took a vow of celibacy for this lifetime. And I didn't even know at the time when I took that vow that I was going to be a Dhamma teacher. I just had so much difficulty in childhood that the vow thought, I thought, oh, that's the honorable thing to do for me in my life. And so I pretty much, with a vow, created all kinds of safe relationships with men so I can not really violate the vow, and I live my life just fine. And then maybe it was about a year ago, not quite a year, I realized that I was in love, flat out in love with a TV character. I mean, over the top, hook, line, and sinker, I am in love with this TV character. And the way that I learned that I was in love is because it was, you know how Netflix is now, you can just watch show after show after show after show after show. And we can watch old shows that we never watched when they were on TV. So there was this show called Dr. Quinn, the Medicine Woman, that was on TV years ago. I never watched it. And they have this mountain man guy in this show that is just, he's the hero. I mean, he's perfect. He shows up all the time, just in time to save the day. It's just perfect. Good looking, always walking around, dressed in a way that's very appealing to me. And so I'm watching this show and I love him. And I come home and I, get dinner and I'm not paying attention that I'm falling in love with this person, that I'm building my life around having an opportunity to see him. I'm not really paying attention. I'm very happy. But there's an edge to the show. I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen it, but it's pretty racist. I mean, it is over the top, some of the stuff they do. And it's like an hour-long show with the commercials, 45 minutes. So you're watching 45 minutes. They go from some horrific behavior towards natives or black people or Asian people. And then in 45 minutes, it's like, oh, we're all friends. Everything's all good. We're all happy. So the problem with Netflix is you can see this episode after episode after episode. You're beginning to feel it much more. Probably was a lot easier to stomach it when it only came on once a week. But since I'm watching 5 or 6 episodes at a time, I'm like feeling this. So finally I decided, that's it. I'm not watching this anymore. This is just too bad. I can't do it. I mean, I was even getting mad at the way this woman who was in the show, Dr. Quinn, was supposed to be his girlfriend. I don't even like her. I don't even like the way that she's treating him. Like, you should find somebody better than that. Right? So I decide one night, out of the blue, I'm not going to watch this anymore. That's it. I can't do it. I'm feeling this uncomfortableness, so I'm going to fix the problem. I'm not going to watch the show anymore. And so the next day, after I finished teaching, I was on my way home, And I got this thought that said, oh, we're to go home and watch our TV show. And I said, nope, not watching that. That's over the top. I can't watch it. And then something happened. I almost busted into tears. I almost lost it on my way home. I was so sad, as if I had lost my friend. I was so sad, and I tried to convince myself, I'm watching myself convince myself I should watch the show. Something as simple as, well, we'll just go watch the reruns, right? Because I've already seen that, so I won't be adding to harm because I've already seen it. So let's just watch the reruns. We won't watch the new ones. I got really, 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 I mean, I'm sharing this in a humorous way so that we, because suffering is a difficult thing to talk about, and we don't want to be more traumatized and get caught in our own suffering that we can't see through it. So I'm sharing an otherwise humorous thing. But I'm telling you, I was overwhelmed with sadness. The whole body was feeling this sadness. I called my son and I said, my oldest boy's married. He had gotten married maybe a year or so before. And I said, I am so upset. I think I'm in love with a TV character and I don't know what I'm going to do about it. I said, it's such a racist show. I can't watch it. Because at first he's like, well, just watch the show. And I said, but it's so bad a show, I can't watch it. He said, Mama, I've been married. You know, you got to take the good and the bad, you know. I mean, that's the nature of relationship. So I'm not really listening to him, but I knew something was happening here. I knew, I could feel that something was happening. Because it felt like watching the show was the easy way out. Somehow it felt like there was something else going on here. So I went to my teacher and I told Rodney. I set up an interview with him and I went and I told him. And I would go home that night. I did not watch the show. I cried myself to sleep and I did not watch the show. And all I could feel was this sense like something's wrong. And I was not, I mean, that was probably the moment when I realized, oh, what's this vow? It's so stupid. I shouldn't have picked this vow. Should have picked some other vow to do, you know? But now I don't have any partner. I'm by myself. That's what was driving all the crying, because I was like all by myself. And this sense of loneliness came up. And, oh, my God, what have I done? I made the wrong choice. And all this stuff started coming up. That's what I was upset about when I went to sleep, right? But I would not watch that show. And I thought, oh, if I just don't watch the show, then it's going to be okay. So I set up an appointment, talked to Rodney, and I said, Rodney, I don't really understand why I'm so upset. Why would I feel so bad about this? Why does all this flooding have to happen now? Just because I said I wasn't going to watch a show. And he started laughing at me. He said to her, it's because you're awake. You are awake. We don't awake. I told the group here, the last group, we awake in suffering. It's the only way to wake up. Because when you're watching the show and it's pleasant, you just fall into the pleasant of it. We just enjoy it. Why would I change anything? Why would I do anything? It's so nice. I like the show. I got my dinner. Everything is great. I'm feeling good. I'm not going to change anything. But as soon as I felt that twinge of suffering, that is the opportunity to wake up. It is the only opportunity we have to wake up. It is why Buddha started the Four Noble Truths with there is suffering. We have to notice it. We have to notice something's wrong. So he said, when you wake up, we wake up from suffering. We wake up. That's how we wake up. That we think our automatic response is that our suffering is coming from outside, that it's coming from something out there. But it's not. It's coming from inside, some craving, some wanting that this thing out there is temporarily satisfying, some wanting, some wishing I had. So the minute, you can see now, the minute I turned off the TV, the minute I turned off this craving while I was in the midst of craving, that's what caused all the difficulty. Because now I can experience this craving. What we don't see is that the craving is connected. I mean, what we don't see is that it's craving and it's not connected to the thing we're craving. That's the work here. That's what we're doing here when we're sitting here practicing, is beginning to see it's not the thing, it's the craving that's the problem. So when I, Rodney told me that when he was a monastic, that he would, you know, they have a vow of celibacy and they're all sort of there by themselves, and rarely women come into the monastery. You know, I mean, they come in, but they come in under limited situations, and in one respect, they bring food, Donna. And he said it would not be uncommon for you to build a love affair with some woman who brings in the food, Donna, and you think she gives you a look, and then you think, ah, she wants me. That's what it is, she wants me. And so you start having this relationship with this woman. You even set up a time where you're going to meet her on the side of the monastery. You haven't told her this because you can't talk to her. But you give her a look like, we'll meet you. And she gives you a look and she knows it. You go all the way over there and now you're mad because she's left you there. She didn't show up. So he's helping me see that you have to see it in your own mind. You have to see that the entire arc of our world is created out of our own minds and not out of what we think is going on out there. And the only time to see that is when we notice we're suffering. If we can turn from the thing that we think is causing the suffering and turn inward to see, why am I having so much difficulty here? What is the problem here? So I begin to realize that what I had been doing over the years of this vow of celibacy was basically having these ongoing relationships with TV characters. That's how I did it. I thought I did it because I was just good, but nope, I did it because I had a replacement. And when I gave up that TV show without paying attention, something got snapped and I had to feel this flood of loneliness, this flood of, you know, overwhelmed that I'd done the wrong thing. Now there's two ways we can get trapped in that flood once it comes. One way leads to suffering, more suffering. One way leads to liberation. The way that leads to suffering is the way that somehow or another gets caught in the story about whatever it is that's coming up. So, of course, I got caught in the story about being lonely and the choice I made and what I did and who should I have done and what should have happened. It's all my father's fault because if he wasn't so violent, I wouldn't even have been in this problem. So we can get caught in all of that. That's the reason why. When we think of the Buddha says, look for the cause of the suffering, then we think therapeutically that long line of discussions we have about why things happen. And it's not to say anything about therapeutically. In fact, if it wasn't for the therapy I went through, I probably wouldn't be able to sit here and just talk about this so casually. So it's not that therapy is the problem. It's just that therapy is not Dhamma. Therapy is a completely different thing, even though many people try to use the Dhamma as therapy. It's not therapy. It's really designed to help you see exactly what's going on. That's it. Not fix it. So the cause that the liberation is pointing to is that grasping. What am I grasping at? That's all you're looking for. What am I grasping after in this moment that isn't real? For me, I was grasping at that this idea that this television show or this, guy was going to satisfy my sense of pleasure, having pleasure and being happy. I'm grasping after that. But sometimes we grasp after things that are impermanent. Like I think I told the first group, my mother died out of the blue, and I would grasp after her being here, wanting her to be here. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that at some point we come to realize all mothers die. And my mother died before some of your mothers died. But some of you people died, your mother died before mine. But all mothers die, and as long as I was grasping at wishing she was still here, then I'm going to suffer. Or sometimes we grasp after wanting everything to look beautiful around us. So I would be in relationships with people, or I lived in circumstances that I would clearly need to get out of. But because I thought getting out of it would make everything look unbeautiful, I wouldn't get out. I would stay and put up with just about anything just so I could make everybody think everything's lovely, nothing to see, it's all beautiful here, everything's okay. Or we think the world is about us. Something that anything anyone does says something about us. If somebody snaps at me, if somebody looks at me the wrong way, if somebody, is rude to me, it says something about me. It says something about us. And those are the four kind of distortions that the mind gets caught in, thinking something is impermanent that's not impermanent. I mean, thinking something is permanent that is not permanent, it's impermanent. Thinking something will satisfy us when things are naturally unreliable will not satisfy us. Thinking something should be lovely, the world should be lovely, beautiful, everything should be nice when the world is ugly. It's not nice. Things go wrong all the time. It's messy and chaotic. Or taking the world as being somehow personal. Taking things that happen in the world personal, when it's really not very personal at all. When the mind gets caught in those things, we start grasping for permanency. We start grasping for satisfaction, a sense of beauty, loving, making the world personal so I enjoy my life. We start grasping after that. And if we can't see that grasping, then we can't liberate ourselves from the suffering. But if we see the grasping, that's what we let go of. We let go of grasping for something to be different than what it is. So there's a couple, there's three things that get in the way of our ability to let go of this grasping, to let go, release ourselves from it. There's three things that sort of get in the way of that. That if we don't see these sort of three things, they are, we want to let go, but we can't let go. It's sort of like there's an example where they say that the way they used to catch monkeys is they would put something sweet in a box. Very simple cage. Put something sweet in a box. The monkey's hand can fit in the box and grab the sweet. But the hand is, the hole is too small for the fist to come out. But if the monkey lets go of whatever that sweet is, they can bring their hand out and get away. But they don't get away because they won't let go of the sweet. And they keep trying to get their hand out with the sweet, but you can't. That's what we do when we're grasping. We get a hold of something and we won't let go. So here's the three areas that we won't let go. And we learn to let go of this. We learn to liberate the mind. First area has to do with wrong view. It has to do with your opinions, our views, our attitudes, our thoughts about something, our judgments. That view that this is the way it should be. If it's not, then we won't let go of our view of the way we think the world should be and see the world as it is. So what you're noticing in the grasping is, am I holding on to a view, an opinion, a judgment that something should be a certain way and it's not? You can even accept, I wish it were some other way, but it's not. The view or the opinion, that judgment that we have, that's the sweet that we have to let go of in order for us to get our hand out of the box and get away of release from the suffering. The other sort of thing that is like a sweet, attractive thing that we grab a hold to and then we won't let go of is this sense of pleasing, pleasant, versus the fear of pain, unpleasant. So we get attached to a sense of having something pleasant and we are conversely afraid of it not being pleasant. That somehow or another, if something's not pleasant, something's wrong. So we get stuck in holding on to this idea that something should be pleasant. And whenever something unpleasant shows up, we try to create some scenario that is going to fix this wrongfulness. Make it work. Make it right. Get back to the pleasant. Because if it's unpleasant, something's wrong. If it were not wrong, it would be pleasant. So we have to let go of this idea that pleasant means right and unpleasant means wrong. It's not true. In fact, some of the deepest sits I've ever had, some of the most subtle, deepest, most, I don't know how you'd call it, stillest sits I've ever had. I have bad knees from years of tomboyish stuff. But they hurt badly. And so even sitting in a chair, they start hurting after a few minutes. And in the beginning of this sit, I can feel them hurting and I have to work with this letting go of my knee pain and just try to work with the sensation of it. But when you get really still and really, really relaxed, that sensation is no longer unpleasant. In fact, it's very pleasant. So the things, if we call some experience unpleasant, we are designating it as bad. And it will never help liberate us because it's bad and it needs to go away. But if we begin to see that there's no real distinction between pleasant and unpleasant, then some of the most unpleasant experiences will be pleasing and help us get to a place of stillness and bliss. Some of the most pleasing experiences, in fact, in the Seven Factors of Enlightenment, there's a thing called a rapture. You may have heard about that. You know, you get this energy and it's supposed to be such a beautiful sense of great joy. And even rapture, in order to get to tranquility that comes after rapture, you have to grow tired of the joy. Think about that for a minute. You have to have so much joy that you don't want it anymore. Like, I'm through with it. It's just unpleasant. Then you can get to tranquility. But as long as you're caught in the joy is just going to be joy, 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 joy. And it's not until you've had enough of it. It's unpleasant. It's so joyous, it's unpleasant. Then you'll get to tranquility and peace. So just because we have these senses, that some if we lock into something saying this is pleasure, this is unpleasant, pleasant, unpleasant, we do that, then we are going to always live in the mind's decision. This is pleasant, this is unpleasant. So we have to practice getting comfortable with the uncomfortable and letting go of what we think is pleasing so we can practice not getting caught by it. And the last one is getting caught in this, when the mind gets caught in its wanting, in this greed, hatred, and delusion. The wanting, I want this or I don't want this. I like this or I don't like this. So instead of us actually experiencing the wanting or the liking or the disliking and the diswanting, we just push away what we don't like and grab after what we like. We don't even think about it. I have a friend who's a monastic, and I like being around monastics as friends because you can always take them to eat for eat dana, food dana. So you take them out and get them something to eat, and you know, you create all this merit all around. So every time my friend sees me, he's like, oh. Because I'm like, let's go eat. So one time we went to eat and I said, I don't know how you can be a monastic. I don't know how you could live practicing all the time. I just don't think I can do that. He says, yeah, you can do it, Tori. He says, what is it if you see something you like? I see something I like. He goes, well, what if you see something you don't like? I don't like it. He's like, well, what if you hear something you like? What is that? I'm thinking, I came for a food donna, not for a quiz. Clearly, there's something I'm supposed to know that I don't know. He says, you could practice when you see something you like that is greed in the mind. It's the mind grabbing after something. You wouldn't like it if the mind was not grabbing after it. It's not that the thing you see is good. It's the mind grabbing after it that creates the liking. Or if you taste something you like, it's the mind grabbing after it. we don't like the word hatred. So if you see or hear or taste something you don't like, that's the mind's aversion, pushing away. So you can see that you could, that liking, don't liking, is actually the little fist of ours in the box holding on to something. You could let go of the sweet and get your hand out of the box if instead of trying to push away or get, you noticed, this is greed in the mind. The liking isn't in the ice cream. It's in your mind. Many people don't like ice cream. I don't know how that is, but there are people that don't like ice cream. So there are, it can't be in the ice cream then, because if it were in the ice cream, everybody would like it. So it's in our own minds that decides whether something is likable or not likable. It's in our own mind that decides something pleasing is good and something unpleasing is bad. It's not in the thing. It's in our minds. And it's in our minds that judges behavior, opinions, and views. So what we're trying to let go of is the lure of the mind. The lure of the mind convincing us that the mind, that whatever the mind tells us, that's what's happening. And as long as we keep holding on to the lure of the mind, we can't get out of the box. Okay, so some practitioners, they can begin to see the lure of the mind and let go of the sweet. But they don't really pull their hand out of the box. They are only sort of attached to the release that comes from letting go. But we don't do the third noble truth. Probably the third noble truth is the most important truth, and most of us don't do it. Most of us don't let ourselves see the third noble truth. So if we go back to my story where I fell in love with the TV character, and I was so upset that night, the first night, and even after I went to see Rodney, because he actually saw me the very next day, I was so upset. So even after I saw Rodney, and I talk about it, and I understand, oh, I understand this is grasping. I understand this is grasping. There's something else that the mind does, that we have one more thing. Because once we see the cause, we have a mind that will then begin to analyze that cause. Like, where did that cause come from? And why is that cause here? And that's the move, I think, that therapy does. That's the move that causes us the most amount of difficulty. Why things keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. Because once the mind understands, oh, I have to see the cause of this, and I can see, oh, this is my thinking that unpleasant is bad. Oh, I see, it's unpleasant is bad. Well, oh, that's because of the way I grew up. I mean, there was all this unpleasant in my house, and of course I would think unpleasant is bad because that's just the way it is. So we can see the thing that the mind is caught on, and then the mind gets caught again by analyzing that causation. It begins to analyze whatever it is that it sees. This is a tricky part, because we don't want to analyze it. We want to see, it's like a rhetorical question. What is the cause of this suffering? It's rhetorical. We don't want to answer it. We want to feel it. So we want to get a sense of, oh, my opinion. I really think this ought to be this way. I think other people ought to be this way. We want to sense that and not do anything about it. It's the only way to see the third truth, because the third truth is there is a cessation and you don't do it. You don't make the suffering go away. And that's where we get tripped up. We somehow get caught in this idea that once I see what's going on, I'm going to fix it. And if we take our still waters with little pebbles thrown in, you can begin to see, oh, that's a pebble being thrown in. And you see the ripples. And then you try to smooth the ripples out. And you see you're making a bigger mess trying to smooth out the ripples. But you have to let the ripples fade away on their own. So the hardest and the most important aspect of the four Noble Truths is when you see the cause, the grasping, you don't do anything about it. You don't try to, I'm not going to grasp anymore. I'm going to stop that. We don't do anything. We just feel the feeling of that grasping. And the mind will let go on its own. It is not an easy thing to do. But the mind will let go on its own. It will let go if it feels the pain of what it's doing. Because usually our minds think it's helping us solve the problem. I'm fixing this. And the only way to get the mind to let go is if it sees, oh, I am the problem. I'm the one doing this. Oh, I'm the one that's causing myself to spin around in all this anger and rage and drama and stuff. It's me. And then you still don't do anything. You feel this pain in the body. Like, you can feel how angry you are. You can feel yourself twisting your arms. You can feel yourself twisting your body. It's so painful. But you don't let go of that twisting. You're not in the story, so hear me on this. You're not in the story of why you're twisting. You're just noticing what the body is doing. And the mind will see, I am causing myself my own pain. And it will let go. That's what monkeys don't get. They will pull their hand out if they let go of the sweet. So the mind will let go of that sweet. It will let go of that judgment, and you can see truly cessation of suffering. Not the end of a problem or fixing the problem, but the cessation of suffering does not come from fixing the outer world so everything is good. Everything is lovely. Everything is beautiful now. Got the right house. Got the right stuff. Got the right friends. Got the right amount of money. Everything is good now. Because that's only going to last like a day or two. And then Trump is going to have some breakout moment. And all of a sudden decide the Canadians are the ones that are all the problems. Takes that, you know, his brain is like that, right? Just takes one thing. So you're not trying to solve the outer problems. That is the biggest thing to see in this idea. In fact, you want the outer world to stay as it is, conflicted as it is. And I want to see, where is this tension coming from? Why is this tension here? Where is this coming from? You want to see it inside yourself. And when you can, the mind will let go on its own. That's what you're trying to help. That's the wisdom in the third noble truth. That's why it's so enlightening. And I know you have felt this. I know you have seen it. You're sitting and something will come to mind and you're spinning in it, spinning in it, spinning in it, and then all of a sudden you kind of realize you're sitting there thinking, and you don't have to make yourself come back to the breath. You, in fact, we can't make ourselves come back to the breath. It's actually the mind turns its awareness back on, turns the light on. So we're practicing teaching the mind to turn the light on and see what it's doing as often as it can. Just keep turning the light on. So we're going to go to lunch here in a few minutes, and when we come back from lunch, we'll talk a little bit about the fourth noble truth. But so some things to begin to see when you're eating lunch. You may not have done it this time, but I always bring something I hate whenever I go. I mean, you think about it. How did you prepare your lunch, right? You picked all the stuff that you really, really like, and you got it all packaged up, and you're like so excited about being able to eat it. But you have to begin to bring something you don't like so you can see how much you even avoided. You put it over here and you put everything else out and keep sliding that over there. We don't want that. Save it for the end. That's how you want to see the wanting and the not wanting, the liking and the not liking in the mind. You want to notice that you see something you like or you taste something you like. And see if you can experience that it's not in the thing that you taste, but it's in your mind in particular telling you that this is good. You want to notice when you hear yourself thinking how much of that story is about you holding on to an opinion that things should be a certain way and how much of it is actually the way things are. Or you want to notice how much of everything about the way you're experiencing your life, experiencing the day, experiencing a conversation or anything, is leaning into this wanting a pleasant experience. Even in the way we talk about retreats, it's like, oh, I hope you have a really nice, pleasing, calm, really nice retreat. Nobody wants a grumbly, irritating, always messing up retreat. But if we're going to wake up, that's what we need. Something that keeps messing with us. So look and see if you can notice how much do we lean into what is pleasant. And what would it look like? We're going to talk about towards the end, how could we, you know, prompt ourselves to see some of these difficulties in a way that's in urban practice, you can do this better than any other way. Because in retreat practices, they kind of almost make everything so protective that it's easy to see that all your irritations is really coming from you. Because there's nothing going on. Nothing's happening. So if you're having any problems, it's coming from you. But in our everyday lives, it seems like there's all this stuff going on. That's where our problems are coming from. If, you know, I'm a fast driver, so if all the slow cars would move to the right like they're supposed to, then I don't have any problems in my lane. But that's not what happens. I assure you. I say you have the same problem with those drivers in Canada, too. So that's what we're looking for. We're trying to look for and see if we can actually see how much of our lives are we trying to control it with judgment, having a sense of pleasure all the time, getting what we want, how much of that's going on, and how much of it can we just accept whatever's in front of us in this kind of way. That's really why I left the prosecutor's office and retired. It's because I had gotten so deep in practice, I thought to myself, I'm going to have to live in a way that I actually don't have any control over it. That I could find a way to live where I was living with no idea. I mean, if I blow all my money, then I blow all my money. But when I was at the prosecutor's office, I could blow all my money, and then 2 weeks later, we'll start all over again. Reset the clock. It's a little different now. And so some of what we're doing is seeing how can I let go of so much control? Because there is a joy, a happiness, a gift that's on the other side of control that you won't know exists until you let go of the control. You won't know it. And in order to know it, you have to let go of the control. But as soon as we take our hands off the controls, it feels like the whole world is shaking and the whole world is shifting. Just got to let that, like pebbles, shift out, fade out. And then eventually, you'll see something on the other side, which is what we're going to talk about in the afternoon.